So I chose the last verse in chapter 5. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Bhuktaram yajna tapasam.
Bhuktaram yajna tapasam.
Sarva loka maheshwaram.
Sarva loka maheshwaram.
Suridam sarva bhutanam.
Suridam sarva bhutanam.
Yatva mam shantim ichchati.
Yatva mam shantim ichchati.
Bhuktaram yajna tapasam.
Bhuktaram yajna tapasam.
Sarva loka maheshwara.
Sarva loka maheshwara.
Suridam sarva bhutana.
Suridam sarva bhutana.
Gatva mam shantim ichchati.
Gatva mam shantim ichchati.
Bhoktaram.
Bhoktaram.
The beneficiary.
Yajna.
Yajna. Of sacrifices.
Of sacrifices.
Tapasa.
Tapasa.
And penances and austerities. Sarvaloka.
Sarvaloka.
Of all planets and the demigods thereof.
Of all planets and the demigods thereof.
Maha Ishvara.
Maha Ishvara.
The Supreme Lord.
The Supreme Lord.
Suhridam.
Suhridam.
The Benefactor.
The Benefactor.
Sarva.
Sarva.
Of all.
Of all.
Bhutanam.
Bhutanam.
The Living Entities.
The Living Entities.
Gyatva.
Gyatva.
Hindustani pronunciation, Gyatva. Down here it's Jnatva.
Thus knowing.
Mam.
Mam.
Me, Lord Krishna.
Me, Lord Krishna.
Shanti.
Shanti.
Relief from material pangs.
Relief from material pangs.
Vichchati.
Vichchati.
One achieves.
One achieves.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada.
A person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attain peace from the pangs of material miseries. Purport. The conditioned souls within the clutches of illusory energy are all anxious to attain peace in the material world. But they do not know the formula for peace, which is explained in this part of the Bhagavad Gita. The greatest peace formula is simply this: Lord Krishna is the beneficiary in all human activities. Men should offer everything to the transcendental service of the Lord, because He is the proprietor of all planets and the demigods thereon. No one is greater than He. He is greater than the greatest of the demigods, Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. In the Vedas, Shvetashvata Upanishad, the Supreme Lord is described as Tam Ishwaranam Paramam Maheshwaram. Under the spell of illusion, living entities are trying to be lords of all they survey, but actually they are dominated by the material energy of the Lord. The Lord is the master of material nature, and the conditioned souls are under the stringent rules of material nature. unless one understands these bare facts. It is not possible to achieve peace in the world, either individually or collectively. This is the sense of Krishna consciousness. Lord Krishna is the supreme predominator, and all living entities, including the great demigods, are his subordinates. One can attain perfect peace only in complete Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada labeled this verse the peace formula. This is an age we're living in, an age of quarrel. Kali means quarrel. Small quarrels and big quarrels. Two or three people have a difficult time living in the under the same roof. Families are quarreling. You don't yet experience it as much here in India as we have experienced it in the Western countries. In the state of California, the divorce rate is 75%. My brother has been divorced 2 times. Now getting married a third time, or four, I don't know, fourth time, I don't know. This is typical for the West Coast of the United States. There's no security for the children. Rich families, so much money, so much facility for sense gratification, but no stable home. Prabhupada pointed out his own experience. He saw in Calcutta a tungawala, a man who has to pull a cart like a donkey, work literally as a beast of burden. He saw this man in the streets. Anybody can see such a person in the streets of Calcutta. Only place where still in India the rickshaws are driven, are not driven by bicycle but by foot power. But he saw this man, he's pulling his cart very strenuously, but his wife is by the side of him, helping. And his little child is sitting on top of the cart, enjoying. So the man is poor and he has to work like an ass, but his family is there. And Prabhupada compared, here in your country, in your rich California, so much money, such a rich family, but the family is broken with divorce. So which is better? This is the age of quarrel. Even families can't stay together. And what to speak of quarrel on international level? We're all living under the threat of annihilation. Atomic war, terrorism, so many things. We're always feeling insecure. We can be slaughtered at any moment by anybody. This is unstable age. So it's a real concern. Where do we find peace? Some people look to the impersonal path. They look toward oblivion. Let me just lose my personal identity and merge into the totality. This is also the strategy of the alcoholic or the drug addict. This is the strategy of the mode of ignorance, to just find forgetfulness in intoxication and sleep. So the impersonal idea of peace is like that also, just oblivion, becoming zero. Krishna is offering a much radically different formula for peace. Not forget who you are, but remember who I am, who Krishna is. Then you'll find peace. He's not saying to Arjuna, "Oh, Arjuna, you have to give up this fighting propensity and come to the mode of goodness. You should renounce the fight and go to the forest and become a yogi. Maybe in your next life you'll be born as a Brahmin and you'll get some success in life." No, Krishna is not recommending that to Arjuna. That's not the point of the whole Bhagavad Gita, just the opposite. Mam anusmara yudhyacha. You just remember me all the time, anusmara, not just some of the time. But one meaning of anusmara is to constantly remember me and fight. Arjun, you're a Kshatriya. Your engagement is under the influence of the mode of passion. That's okay. You will find peace. Stanam Prapsiti Shashvatim. You will attain the supreme abode of peace by fighting this battle and remembering me. So Krishna's formula is not to artificially try to develop some semblance of the sattva guna, to artificially become a brahmana, when that isn't your conditioning. Rather, here's his formula. For real peace, not impersonal annihilation, not pretending to be peaceful when you're not, not some artificial adjustment of the mind, some mental gymnastics by which you pretend to be peaceful. But rather, here is his formula. Gyatva mam, understand me. Understand who I am. Don't worry about who you are. You're my part and parcel, living entity, and you're in trouble. In material entanglement. Now, the details don't matter. But what you have to understand is who I am. If you understand me and your relationship with me, then everything will be okay. Gyatva mam shantim vichati. Those who can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they can attain peace and happiness. So Krishna specifies how to know him. If you make up the wrong idea of God, your own idea, that won't be so effective. It won't get the same result. If you understand Krishna the way he wants to be understood, or the way he recommends we understand him, then he says, if you understand me as this, this, and this, then you get peace. So here's the three clauses of the formula. Bhoktaram yagatapasam. Your problem is you don't understand that I'm in control, that I am the supreme proprietor, as stated in the Ishopanishad. Isha vasyam idam sarvam yat kinchit jagat yam jagat. Everything that exists in the whole world, no matter where you go, you may get a visa to go to Canada, to go to Switzerland, it won't be any different. It's all under Krishna's control, wherever you are. First of all, he says, Bhoktaram Yagatapasam, that I am the enjoyer, literally enjoyer. Prabhupada is a little poetic here. He says beneficiary. Legal or a term from insurance business. Now, you buy your life insurance and you have to designate who the beneficiary is. If you die, who gets the money? That's beneficiary. Because he says, I'm the beneficiary. You're working for me. Everybody is working for me. That's what Prabhupada means when he says in the purport, he's the supreme proprietor. Supreme capitalist. Communists don't like that. Socialists don't like this idea. That someone is making a profit on someone else's labor. But that's life. Yeah. That's business. I mean, Krishna is a supreme businessman. He's making profit off of everybody's labor. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam. Everybody is performing yagya and tapas. Sacrifice and austerity. They may not be Vedic brahmanas or yogis performing what we, our stereotyped idea of what is yagya and tapas. They may not even be pious. They may be impious. They may be in animal consciousness, or they may be in animal bodies. But every living entity is doing yagya and tapas. They're working for the pleasure of the Supreme. The analogy that's very often given, how is it? Yata gavi nasi protas. Like bulls. Go means cow, but it is both a feminine and a masculine noun. Go. It means cow, it also means bull. Not only the cow, the bull also. It's called go. Plural form is gavaha, gavas. Like bulls, who have the Dhamma, rope through their nose, nasi. They're domesticated. They're under control of the master. And they're pulling some burden, some water mill, big stone, and the bulls pull it around for pumping water, old system, before they had electric pumps. And in the future, when there won't be any more electricity, it'll have to be used again. So some places, I guess it's still being used in India, some places. This mechanical, bull-driven mill. Like the bulls, who are working for somebody else, working very hard. They don't even know what they're doing. Everybody in existence is working for Krishna. Whether they do it consciously, as Krishna-conscious devotees, or whether they're Krishna-unconscious, whether they're animals or animal-like human beings who are just working like beasts of burden and they don't even realize for whom. They may think that they're self-employed or that they're employed by somebody else. They don't realize who the supreme employer is. It's Krishna. That's Krishna's claim. And he's telling us, you better if you understand this. Now, how can Krishna claim to deserve and have a right to demand the profits of everybody's labor? Because he's the proprietor. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. Not only is he the owner of one factory or one corporation, he's the owner of everything that exists. There's no capitalist, there's no commissar in the socialist country who can claim so much power, that he is the proprietor of every single thing and everybody. He owns all the assets. And that's why there's no reason why anyone can refuse him the right to be the enjoyer of everybody's work, because he owns everything. The proprietor can claim the profits. He's sole proprietor of the corporation. So Krishna is the sole proprietor of the universal corporation. So someone here, knowing these two things, can, out of fear and awe and reverence, surrender to God, because he's the supreme proprietor. If you don't submit to him, you're in trouble. Out of fear, we can submit. But that is not what Krishna wants. That's not devotion. That's coercion. Materialists, or persons who are not actually in complete control, only they have some money, or they have some military power, or some political power, or some sort of mystic influence. Maybe there's some yogi who can, some tantric who can control other people's minds. They have some power over other people, but they're not supremely in control. So they have to use force, coercion, to make people submit. Krishna doesn't have to do that. Even though he's got more power, more capacity to coerce than anybody else, to force. He could force us all to submit or die or be destroyed. But he doesn't do that. He puts in a third clause. The best reason to submit, Suridam Sarvabhutana, because he's everybody's best well-wishing friend. There's different kinds of friends. There's different words in Sanskrit. Mitram, or Mitram is one word. It's a common friend, companion. But especially young people, their companions may not be well-wishers. The companions want to share in their enjoyment, in their debauchery. And friends get one another in trouble. That's a mitra, companion. But a higher friend, a higher sense of friendship is surit. Someone who is actually concerned for your welfare. Not just that we'll hang out together and enjoy life and exploit. But I'm actually concerned for the good in life. I'm concerned that you actually become successful in life. Like a father or a mother who's very concerned for the child. That's surit. or like a friend who's a real friend. So Krishna says, I'm Sudit. I'm the best well-wishing friend of everybody. He's everybody's companion as a super soul. But he doesn't just encourage us in nonsense. He tries to dissuade us from nonsense, however he can. The suffering we experience in life is Krishna's arrangement to help dissuade us from just being in delusion forever. He gives us instructions in the Vedas. Few rare souls like Arjuna can get instructions right from the mouth of Krishna. Everyone else can read the same instructions recorded in the Shastra. Bhagavad Gita is there in the Mahabharata. Everybody in India knows Mahabharata. 50 years ago, in the villages, even in the cities, entertainment was based on Mahabharata and Ramayana. And you learned about the instructions of Krishna in the Gita, the example of Lord Ram in his life, and the example, well, Krishna's example is not something to follow. But anyway, you know, you got the proper instructions because it was based on the Shastra. Especially for the popular consumption, the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. All the principles of human culture and civilization are contained in these two books. Nowadays, young people are watching MTV instead. You can see the result. In 5 years, India has degraded intensely, a lot. Young women are dressed how prostitutes wouldn't dare to dress 10 years ago. So it doesn't take long for things to change, for the worse. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram Suridam Sarva Bhutanam. So Krishna is letting us suffer, or even arranging for our suffering, our frustration in all our attempts, and our suffering in so many ways, for our benefit, to dissuade us from simply remaining in ignorance and foolishness forever. An intelligent person, you tell him, he reads in the Shastra, he reads the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, he listens about the example of Lord Ramachandra, what a perfect man he was. And he learns from hearing, and he avoids nonsense. A second-class intelligent man, a less intelligent man, hears, but he still cannot control himself, and he does nonsense. And the material energy, under Krishna's direction, punishes him. And then he learns from suffering. And he realizes, oh, what I learned from my grandmother, you know, while she was reading to me, this is what I should be living like, following this pious life, after suffering. And the third-class foolish man suffers and still doesn't learn. So for the, Prabhupada explains that for that third-class man of the least intelligence, the only good instruction is what is called argumentum ad baculum in Latin. Argument from the stick. He has to be beaten like an animal into submission. So Maya beats him over the head, and eventually, after many lifetimes, he learns his lesson. This is all Krishna's arrangement as our well-wishing friend, to teach us, either by instruction or by, if we have to, by direct punishment at the hands of Maya. Because he doesn't want us to just be foolish and ignorant. He's the well-wishing friend of everybody. He's supplying the necessities of life for everyone. And he never does anything that's not for the benefit of whoever is involved. Anybody who's not in Krishna consciousness, who's not a pure devotee of Krishna, all he knows how to do is exploit other people. That's his whole mindset. Everything and everybody else exists only for his exploitation. So, anyway, first of all, those who realize these three clauses of the formula, that Krishna is the enjoyer of everybody's work. Nobody is independent. And the fruits of our work belong to the Supreme Lord, We cannot claim them for ourselves. The reason is that he's the absolute owner of everything. And finally, he's our well-wishing friend. Whatever is happening is for our good. It's by Krishna's arrangement. And we can accept it, we should accept it, graciously, gratefully, and just submit to Krishna. Then we find peace. On the other hand, most living entities in this world are in anxiety and are suffering pain because they can't or refuse to accept this formula. An honest person can look at his own life, or even maybe he can't remember his whole life, just remember the last 3 days, the last week in your life. Was there one day among in that week or in that month that you can remember? One day in which you were completely happy? In which you didn't suffer? Can you remember one day in your whole life where you didn't have a hard time with something or other? That's the material world. It's constant embarrassment, frustration, and suffering. Bayam dvitiya abhinivesha tapsyad ishara petasya viparyo asmitihi tanmayaya ato buddha abhajetam vaktyaika yesham gurudevatatma. This is an instruction from, I don't remember which one of the nine brothers called Yogendras, who are among the sons of Lord Rishabhadev, the incarnation of the Supreme Lord, who, I don't know where he was born, but he passed away in Karnataka on the Kutakachala mountain there in northern Kanada. Where is that place? Not far from Kolur. Go up the hills from Kolur. Artha Darsh had a farm there. Probably still has a farm. Right there on the mountain where Rishabhadev died in the forest fire. So among his sons, one of these sons spoke this verse. By allowing yourself to become absorbed in anything other than Krishna. Dvitiya. Dvitiya means second. There is nothing other than Krishna, actually. Ekam eva advitiyam brahma. The absolute truth is one and there is no other second. But we, in illusion, think that there is something other than Krishna. And the consequence is, first of all, that we become fearful. Fear is the common experience of everybody in material life. We try to ignore it, but it's the undercurrent of our material life. Just like you put your fingers in your ears, you can hear a buzzing in your brain. That sound is always there, although you don't hear it, because so much other sound is there. But if you're in a quiet place or you close your ears, you can hear that nada, that primordial sound. But the primordial emotion that we may not be aware of all the time is fear. That is a basic material feeling. Terror of being separated from our ever well-wishing eternal friend, the Supreme Lord. Bayam dvitiya abhinivesha tatsyad ishara petasya. The process is development of this fearful condition. Is that we turn our face away from Krishna. We become disinterested in him. Instead of remembering, being aware of this peace formula, we want to forget that he's the controller, and we want to assume the position of controller, proprietor, enjoyer of whatever we can get our hands on, whatever domain we can conquer, peacefully or otherwise. We want to be the controllers and enjoyers. Especially in the modern world, and especially in these big cities. That's the mode of life. And that's the cause of fear. Ishara petasya. What it means is turning, the more you become engrossed in materialistic life, in the life of exploitation, of the life of you being the controller and enjoyer, the more you forget the real controller and enjoyer. So the first thing you have to do is forget Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
If you want to be a materialist, you're going to have to start by forgetting Krishna. If you remember Krishna, you're not going to be able to be a materialist. Ishara Petasya. So first of all, turn your face away from Krishna. Forget the idea that he's supreme. Viparya Yaha. The second step, second stage in the process, is to forget who you are. Your eternal identity is that you're Krishna's servant. Jivera Swarup Hoy Krishna Nityadash. The actual Swarup, the actual real identity, who the spirit soul really is. Individuals have separate identities, but the basic identity that's shared by every living entity is that they are servants of Krishna. There are different kinds of servants, but we're all servants. Forget that. Viparyaya, asmitihi. Asmitihi means forgetting who you are, and viparyaya means assuming a false identity of what you're not, actually. And therefore we take these material bodies with racial and national designations, gender designations, and we identify by this bodily configuration. I'm male, I'm female, I'm Afghanistani, you know, whatever I am, I'm identifying superficially with the body. That's viparyaya. Tanmayaya. And that's all facilitated by the all-powerful material energy of the Supreme Lord. So what can an intelligent person do who knows that this is an illusion? How can he free himself from the illusion? Buddha abhijetam. It behooves the person who is smart enough to see that this is a trap to get himself out of the trap by worshipping the Supreme Lord. Try to reconnect yourself with the Supreme Lord. Try to remember him, your lost friend. Bhakti-aikaya, with exclusive, unalloyed devotion. Prabhupada likes to use these poetic words, unalloyed. Another scientific word for metallurgy. Now, you want, we have, this is my wedding ring. It is, I think, 12 karat gold. Useless. It's worth $20. Yeah. In India, no goldsmith would even look at it. Yeah. Even 22 carats. Okay, for jewelry, anything, you know, more than 22 carats is too soft to use. But if you want, you know, gold bullion, you want a brick of gold, you know, to keep just for money, you want 24%, 24 carat, 100% gold, unalloyed. No mixture of tin, bronze, other metals. That is unalloyed. Unalloyed devotional service means no mixture, no jnana, no karma, pure, nothing else but devotional service, nothing else but love for the Supreme Lord. Bhaktiya ekaya. So we should worship the Supreme Lord with unalloyed devotion. Guru Deva Tatma. And we can do this on the strength of taking shelter of a bona fide Vaishnav spiritual master, and accepting our spiritual master as our life and our soul. Devata and Atma. Devata means your worshipable deity. So we're trying to learn how to worship Krishna, but we learn it by worshipping our spiritual master. We practice serving Krishna by serving our spiritual master. The spiritual master is there. You can serve him, you can feed him, you can give him practical services. You practice serving Krishna by serving the Vaishnav. You can consider all the Vaishnavs your gurus and practice serving them as the way to learn how to serve Krishna, the way to attract Krishna's attention and be accepted into his service. One should accept the guru as devata, as the worshipable deity, the object to receive service. And Atma, your real self. Or Atma also means intelligence. My own intelligence is not in good working order. I've used my intelligence for exploitation. I've been controlled by lust, envy, and greed for so many lifetimes. So my intelligence I cannot trust until it becomes purified. In the meanwhile, I can substitute, at least as a temporary substitute, the intelligence of my spiritual master, surrogate intelligence. That's described by Narottam Das Thakur in his prayer to the spiritual master. Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya Chite De Koriya Aikyo Arna Koriya Mone Ash. You should take the words that emit from the lotus mouth of the spiritual master and come to complete agreement with them. Not just listen blindly and just do whatever he says without understanding what he's trying to tell you, but actually try to become convinced, yes, he's right. What he says is right. And if you don't agree or you don't understand, then try to understand and try to come to an agreement to actually accept the instructions of the spiritual master. Ask questions. Struggle with your doubts. Reveal your doubts and discuss them. And become convinced. Guru Mukha Padma Bhakya Chitte Te Koriya Aikya. Come to an agreement. Yes, what he says is right. His idea of what I should do with my life is the right idea. Arna Koriya Moneyash. And don't harbor any contrary ideas in your heart. Money, in the heart. Don't have any other ambition but the ambitions that are defined for you by your spiritual master. Then you can conquer this illusion and fear, this fearful condition of material life, by taking shelter of the Vaishnavas. We can get the shelter of Krishna. We can begin his intimate worship and become free, attain real peace. Real peace is not just a negation of anxiety, but it's becoming submerged into the ocean of bliss. It's a positive thing. Begins with negation of the bad feelings, but then there are so many good feelings involved in being Krishna conscious. So much we cannot imagine what the potentials are of satisfaction and enjoyment in Krishna consciousness. Srila Rupa Goswami explains in the beginning of his Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. He names the book after an analogy that the experience of rasa, the pleasure of sharing service with Krishna, reciprocating with Krishna, having a relationship with Krishna, that is called rasa. It's a taste. Just like we talk about rasa as juice, mango juice, pineapple juice, is a taste. But there is a real taste that is the actual pleasure in life. That is transcendental rasa. And Rupa Goswami uses the analogy, there is like an ocean of rasa. The impersonalists are trying to enjoy Brahmananda, but that is like a little drop of water in the desert, or the water that can be contained in the hoof print left by a small calf, small little cow. How much water can be held? 300 milliliters in a calf's footprint. Compared to that, the rasa, bhakti rasa, is a vast ocean of pleasure. We will be submerged in it and never come up to the surface again. But then he says, if you even taste one drop of that vast ocean, just take one small sample, just like the oceanographers, scientists who want to study the ocean. They want to bring it into their laboratory, but they cannot collect the whole ocean and bring it to a laboratory. They don't have a laboratory that big. So they go out on a boat to the middle of the ocean and sink a pipe down as far as they can go and collect a few bottles of water, a small sample, and they learn about the ocean by studying the sample. So collect a small sample of the ocean of bhakti rasa.
Rupa Goswami says one drop is enough. If you ever are able to experience, as according to Rupa Goswami, one drop of this Bhakti Rasamrita, Sindhu, you will never again be attracted to any material enjoyment. You'll never be tempted by Maya again, if you've tasted even one drop. We can be introspective and wonder, maybe I haven't tasted a drop. I'm still attracted to material things. I still have my doubts and my misunderstandings and my bad habits. So that means I haven't even tasted one drop yet. There shouldn't be a reason to be discouraged. Imagine how fixed up we will be when we taste that first drop of the real nectar. Never again subject to the illusions, the allurements of Maya. Never having any desire to be an illusion. In devotional service, we're given a small shadow of a fraction, a tiny molecular, just like the homeopathic doctors, they'll titrate something 10 times until there's practically nothing left physically, just a trace of it, of the substance, by repeated titration. So even if you get one 40 times titrated remnants of a shadow of a reflection of one drop of devotion, that's enough to get to satisfy you and to impel you to give your whole life to devotional service. So that's what we are experiencing. Some shadow, some titrated fraction of a remnant of a drop, of one drop, that we've tasted. We've experienced the pleasure of devotional service, each in our own ways. The company of devotees, the taste of Krishna's prasadam, the pleasure of reading Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and of the ecstasy of preaching and doing various services for Krishna. This is our reflections of a drop here and there. And they're enough to keep us going our entire life, if we're fortunate. Imagine what we will experience when we get the full drop, or when we fall into the whole ocean. Then there's no recovery. There's no reversion back to illusion. So that's what Krishna's talking about. He's talking in a low key here. It's only the 5th chapter of the Gita. And the Gita is preliminary instructions. So Krishna's not revealing all the secrets here of what the Shanti really involves. It's not just some passive, negative experience. It's more ecstasy than you can experience from any variety of sense gratification, no matter what you can dream of. People go out of their ways to dream up of all sorts of stimulations in sense gratification. But the pleasure, the so-called shanti, is more stimulating than any kind of sense gratification, the actual pleasure of Krishna consciousness. That's what Krishna is actually talking about here, shantim richati. Not just that you can get a good night's sleep, but that you'll never be attracted to anything material again, because you'll be totally satisfied and happy. And we accomplish that by first of all understanding who Krishna is, how he is the owner of everything, the controller of everything, and our best friend. He's not going to exploit us unfairly or destroy us or harm us. We can trust him. We develop our trust in Krishna and try to convince Krishna somehow or other to trust us, then our success is assured. Simple as that. It's a personal thing. We have to learn to trust Krishna, and we have to convince Krishna that he can trust us, that we're trustworthy, that he can entrust us with his service. Then it's just a matter of practicing, and in due course of time we'll experience this actual shanti, which is not an empty negative thing. It's the highest pleasure, the actual goal of life. Okay, so I'll stop here. Anybody have any questions or comments about any of this? Or anything else? Yes, Guru.
In the beginning, you explained about Arjuna's state, that even though he was like Yuddha is like a working in the passion mode, but Krishna said something that it's not they have to live but work for Krishna.
Well, that was my, that wasn't what Krishna said, there was this my realization of it, that Krishna's not telling Arjuna that he has to change, you know, become a Brahmin, he has to graduate to the mode of goodness. He's not bothering with that. Man is passionate, let him be passionate, but be passionately attracted to Krishna, passionately absorbed in Krishna's service. The man who's in the mode of ignorance, he's going to have more difficulty. You know, if he's lazy, foolish, depressed, then, you know, and that consciousness is not easy to serve Krishna. He can also be engaged. But that's the consciousness of a Shudra, a man who's lamenting, who's lazy. That's Shudra consciousness. Not easy to engage, but it can be. The Shudras, those with that kind of mentality, can also be engaged with Krishna service. Often there has to be some coercion. They have to be pushed to serve Krishna. A person, or a person who is very strongly influenced by the mode of ignorance, you can help him transcend by engaging him very busily. Keep him busy. Don't give him a chance to lament and get distracted. Make him work very busily for Krishna. Then even the man in the mode of ignorance can be purified, can attain this peace. And the man in the mode of passion, he can be encouraged. There's so many things that have to be organized and done for Krishna's service. Let him use his passionate energy for Krishna's practical service. That's Arjuna's position. He's Kshatriya. He's working in the mode of passion. And he's in a situation now, battle is here. His business is to kill. That's passionate business. Brahmins don't do that. They don't engage in slaughter. But Krishna's not telling him. Arjuna's idea was, I should give this up and become a yogi. I'll go to the forest and meditate. Forget this battle. But Krishna tells him, no. You'll go to the forest. Kartam nechasi yan mohat. Karishyo yava shopitat. You're thinking you don't want to do this. Out of illusion. Your nature is going to force you. Prakritim tvam niyokshati. Your nature is going to make you fight. You can go to the forest to meditate, and you'll get in a fight with somebody there, because you're a fighter. So the passionate nature cannot be artificially given up. It can be transcended, but it takes time and work. So Krishna says, don't worry about that. Don't worry about it changing your material situation, changing your modes. Just take what you have and use it for Krishna's service. And that will elevate you from the lower modes. That's all. You know, the formula is not a formula for practicing how to become a Brahmin. Of course, we need Brahmin. Prabhupada did found ISKCON and as a program for training up Brahmins. He wanted Vaishnava Brahmins. But that was the practical need for the preaching movement. But it's not essential for the process of devotional service that we have to become Brahmins. Therefore, the second phase of the Krishna consciousness development of ISKCON is the development of Varnashram Dharma, Daivi Varnashram Dharma, where it's understood that not everybody can function as a Brahmin. Let those who are fighters be fighters and administrators, let those who are producers produce and manage, and let those who are just laborers be laborers, but be it for Krishna. The Brahmin should be there, but they'll be a minority. And Krishna consciousness should not just be for a small minority of those who can be brahmacharis and sannyasis and live in the ashram. 99% of the population can't do that, maybe for a few years, but not for their whole life. Krishna consciousness should be organized not just for a few people, but for the whole human society. So the Varnashram system should be reinstituted to give that facility so that everybody can participate in Krishna consciousness. Even if they have problems with the rabbinical principles, they can't live up to that standard, let them serve Krishna according to their capacity anyway, and be part of this movement according to however they can. That's Krishna's program. It's not just Krishna chose Arjuna to be the recipient of this knowledge. He's not a sannyasi. He's not
a Brahmin. He's a Grihastha and a Kshatriya, but Krishna chose him. Bhakto simi me sakacheti. You're my friend and my devotee, and therefore I'm speaking this Bhagavad Gita to you. Okay. Anything else? To make them strong. The obstacles are there. Because we have to learn to give up our attachment to material things and become attached to Krishna instead. We're too much dependent on our material basis of security. We're dependent on our money, our family. So Krishna takes your money away, or takes your family away, or, you know, makes it difficult, you know, to get the support of your family. That's a severe test. But he does it to teach you how to depend on him instead. Yasyaham anugranami hadushye tadanam shanai. If I have special favor on somebody, then I take away everything he has. I make him poverty stricken, so that his family reject him. You know, don't want anything to do with him anymore, because now he's a useless person. Then he can surrender, then he can give his life to Krishna easily. So obstacles are put there to facilitate our spiritual advancement. There's so many obstacles. Devotees, it's not that when you begin devotional service, everything will become easy. Life can become more difficult after deciding you want to give your life to Krishna. Because Krishna is giving us tests to make us strong and make us convinced that he's the only thing we can depend on. That we cannot depend on our money, our family, our country to protect us. Krishna will protect us, but nobody else has that power to be our best well-wishing friend, Suridam. Sudit. Just like when you're manufacturing a sword. The sword maker takes the sword and he puts it into a fire, the steel, and he puts it into a fire to make it red hot. Then he beats it with a hammer. You know, the idea is not to break the sword and ruin it, to melt the sword or to break it, but he's making it strong by beating it with a hammer, by almost melting it and then hitting it with a big hammer. So like that, Krishna puts us in a fire of ordeal and then beats us. Yeah, so we become strong. If we can take it. Krishna never gives us a test we cannot tolerate. So if we're feeble, if we're timid, then Krishna won't test us very much. But if we tell Krishna, I'm ready to be tested, give it to me, test me, then he'll test you strongly. And then we'll make quick progress. If we allow Krishna and we welcome Krishna to put us in difficult situations, then our progress is very quick. Then we quickly give up all our false attachments, all our foolishness, and become quickly, very rapidly purified. But Krishna will not force it unless we're ready for it, unless we're willing to take it. Some tests are there for everybody, but the devotees who are timid and feeble, Krishna doesn't test them too much. He lets them go on and slowly develop. But the devotees who are serious and want to make quick advancement, Krishna arranges it by testing them a lot, often and hard. But it's voluntary. When we want it, then Krishna gives it. Anyway, we should understand, we may not be ready for heavy tests, for two heavy tests, but at least we should understand theoretically why he's doing it. It's for our good, to make us determined to take shelter of complete shelter of him and of nothing material. Okay? All right. Is there any other comments or questions?
Yeah. You explained about the gurus. Unless a devotee gets convinced about the particular, like guru gives some instructions or sevas, and if a disciple have a doubt in understanding, you should ask a guru and get clear of your doubt, and okay, you have to execute. But many times, it's very difficult many situations that we can't understand Guru's instructions. He tells that general, other than general instructions, like specific instructions, very difficult to understand. In that case, what a person should do.
Okay, so maybe everyone didn't hear. We should, you know, repeating what I said, that we should try to become convinced of the instructions our spiritual master gives us. And if there are doubts, we should discuss the doubts. But then your point was that sometimes there's so many details that we have doubts about, we just can't. We just don't have a chance, or it's not possible to get them cleared.
It's difficult for the person to understand even.
Like if it's difficult to understand, then you have to consult. Yeah. Guru doesn't just mean the Diksha Guru. Diksha Guru may not always be available for all your questions. Therefore, you also have Shiksha Guru. The Diksha Guru sanctions that you can take instructions from these devotees. And basically, in ISKCON, it's a big family. We can take instruction from all the devotees in ISKCON. We share the same philosophy. There's no danger that you're going to be taught a different philosophy. So you go to mature devotees, whoever you can find, and you discuss your doubts. Then someone tells you something. Oh, you should do this and that. You know, your problem is that you may want to confirm it with your spiritual master, your initiating spiritual master. You can get advice from someone and then present what you heard from someone else to your spiritual master and ask him, is this a good suggestion? Is this a right analysis? But you can get consultation from any devotee who's more experienced than you. So there's every opportunity in the association of devotees. If you're living with practically in the association of devotees and you have some communication with them, then there's all opportunity to get your doubts resolved, no matter how complicated they are. We just have to take advantage of that. Keep the lines of communication open. Open your hearts to other devotees. That's one of these six kinds of loving exchange. Guyam akyatu of them. Guyam akyati prichchati. You reveal secrets that you have in your heart. That includes your doubts. Those are among your secrets. We put on a show of being strong, but actually we have our weaknesses and our doubts. When we're with other Vaishnavas, we should be able to open our heart and admit our doubts. Not just pretend to be strong, stronger than we are. And prichchati. We should inquire from other devotees. Are you satisfied? You look in anxiety. Is there some problem? Just like Bhumi Devi was approached by Dharana at the beginning of Kali Yuga. You look pale. You look unhappy, depressed. Is there some problem? Yeah. And he suggested maybe because the unruly kings are abusing you. Maybe you're unhappy because you see the condition of the helpless women, children, Brahmins, how they're being mistreated. Is that what's making you unhappy? Or is it that Krishna has left you? Maybe that's the real reason why you're depressed. So that's inquiring. That takes compassion, though. If you're so full of your own anxiety, you won't be able to show compassion to others. So we want to help other people, beginning with our own God brothers and God sisters. To do that, to feel compassion, we have to be free enough from our own anxiety. If we're miserable and depressed and full of doubts, then how can we help anybody else? But if we're more or less satisfied in Krishna consciousness and feeling enthused, then we can have real compassion for others. So if you're full of doubts and anxiety, then consult. Try to reveal your heart to other devotees and try to resolve these doubts. Okay, I guess we can stop here. So thank you. All glory Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai.